Welcome to the Esports Business Network podcast. I'm your host, Trent Knox. I'm the founder and CEO of Esports Business Network. This is EBN podcast number 43. Our guest is Michael Wiesnes, the Director of Strategic Partnerships for GG Leagues. In this podcast, we discuss topics from grassroots to pro level, obstacles facing esports. We talk about how collegiate is building a path to pro, and how the future of esports is being shaped in the here and now. Enjoy.
This is the future. Evolution. This is the future.
Hey y'all, it's Trent Knox with the Esports Business Network podcast. Welcome back to another amazing episode that we're going to have here. My guest, well, what can I say? He's done a lot, and he's currently doing a lot in the esports industry. Welcome to the show, Michael Wiesnes. I'm gonna mess this up, man. Okay, how do you pronounce your last name?
Yeah, everybody does. It's a pleasure to be here. My last name is pronounced Wiesnes. It's completely
Wiesnes.
Yes.
Yeah, that's like. That's one of my favorite things about this show is, you know, butchering people's names. That's my favorite thing to do. No, but man, I appreciate you being on the show, Wiesnes. And Michael, you've done a lot. We had a chat before, you know, a few weeks ago, and I got to know you a little bit. But I mean, I didn't really ask you this, but did you grow up in Chicago or in Illinois?
Yeah, no. So I grew up in Illinois around the Lake in the Hills area. So yeah, I'm a proud Illinois native. So I've dealt with all the blizzards.
Oh, wow. Yeah, of course, man. Up north, yeah. What's it like growing up in Chicago in the gaming world? What was going on? Were there a lot of events when you were growing up?
I mean, that's back in the, my God, saying it now is going to make me sound old. That's back in the 90s. You know, there was a lot of events in terms of like your friends throwing N64 parties, come play Super Smash Brothers. But really growing up towards like the 2000s and past 2010, you know, there were some events. I know there was an MLG event out here a long time ago in Chicago. I believe it was for Halo. It's pretty cool. But it wasn't as big, I think, as in the West Coast. I mean, I know we had Optic out here for a very long time, and I was playing Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2 back in the day, and they got me into it. So that's kind of what I did and how I really started cutting my teeth more and more into getting involved into esports type style of gaming.
Yeah, Optic being from my part of the world down here in the South and up in the Dallas area. But interestingly enough, you mentioned the West Coast. I've been invited to be a speaker at LA Games Conference coming up on May 12th. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because I feel sort of, I don't know how I feel about it in a way, because I'm from the South. Mm-hmm. The representation of the South is based on the Houston Outlaws and Optic, mm-hmm. like you mentioned, the Dallas Fuel, like these sort of teams that don't really represent the culture of Texas. I don't know if that's like something that that resonates with you in Chicago.
Yeah, I mean,
you feel like the esports really, the professional scene represents you in Chicago, or in Illinois, to like greater Illinois area?
I think the problem just with esports in general is they're trying to be like traditional sports, you know, where they can represent a certain area, but they don't. They're not really landlocked, and that's the problem with a lot of these companies. They try to do that. I know with the Overwatch League, they were trying to have mainstays, those households. Names, but I mean, I think I could speak for a lot of fans here, and I could be wrong, but I never felt any close lineage to a team. Say, oh, you know, we were grown in Chicago. I don't really see a lot of events for my area. I don't really see a lot of, you know, deep roots for my area. But if I were to say for the Bears, or if I were to say for the Chicago Cubs or the Bulls or the Sox that mm-hmm. paid their way for that fan loyalty and that homegrown fan feeling, it exists for traditional sports. But for esports, I'm right there with you. I don't feel it that way for teams around my area, especially in the Midwest.
Yeah, we got a lot to talk about, Michael. It's because you sort of dabble in all the major areas in esports, from collegiate to, you know, recreational to professional. You have your hands in the esports industry in many of the different like buckets, the topics in esports. And when, you know, right now, I think if correct me if I'm wrong, your big project is with GG Leagues, right? And strategic partnerships.
Correct.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. And that particular, that company GG Leagues, for those who don't know, is a recreational gaming platform, right? So it brings people on a local level together to play video games.
Yeah, no, and we're doing some fantastic things here at GG. You know, we're taking a step back. Everyone wants to be pro. Everyone wants to be professional. But what about the park and recreational departments? You know, what about the communities looking for a place to go, to send their kids, to be engaged, to be educated, to have fun? And that's where we kind of step in. And we provide our full service solution. So these park and recreational departments don't have to look for casters. They don't have to look for referees or admins. We run the whole thing, and we're very hands-on. We're very intimate. And that's what I like about GG Leagues the most, and what separates us from every other recreational esports platform is we're very hands-on. We're very caring. And the team here at GG Leagues is very smart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what is like the average age of a client of GG Leagues?
Yeah. So we work with several different age groups. We have 8 to 12, we have 13 to 18, and then we have 18 plus. We actually have a lot of youth playing. And mm-hmm. I believe it's about a 37% of our users are within that youth category. Parents signing up their kids to be able to play, getting them to be ready for that Saturday match. The next group is our teenage group, which is 13 through 18. They have, I believe that's, 36%. So I would say our age group falls around that 12 to 13 age, if I were to just look at those two areas.
So 12 to 13. And what games are they playing?
The games they're playing are Rocket League, Fortnite, Overwatch, Super Smash Brothers. But if I were to go with the younger demographic, it's Fortnite, man. They still love it. It's the most popular game.
Yeah, it's interesting. And so do you provide do you work with partners, or do you provide hardware for these rec centers to facilitate these tournaments and play?
Yeah, no, we don't provide any of the equipment. We don't mm-hmm. give them consoles. We don't provide them the games. We're connecting those park and recreational departments to their community members at the house, which are already playing those mm-hmm. games, already being active. We're giving them a standardized, formalized version of a tournament, 6-week long season, similar to that if I was playing recreational baseball and football. They can play. They know when their schedules are, their matches are, and they just kind of have a good time. So when we work with partners outside the recreational space, we're really looking for someone that understands our mission, connect with the overall park and recreational feel, maybe provide additional prizing, maybe provide additional forms of education process for the parents or for the community at large. Same times we're looking for lifestyle brands to really make that health and wellness hit home. Maybe get some swag for the kids that isn't so gamified, but comfortable enough that they could bring to school. And same thing with in terms of backpacks. We have that back to school type feel and that education look.
Cool. And what's the process of onboarding a new rec center?
Yeah. So what we do is after they've officially signed on for GG Leagues, we're going to move them on to our partner processing team. And what that's going to end up doing is asking them questions in terms of how they would like to handle registration, some park and recreational departments, they want to take that in. It's perfectly understandable. After we figure that step out, it's really getting them comfortable for the season. So if they're looking, say we have 2 weeks before the summer season that's going to start, we'll ask them if that's going to fit for what they're looking for, or if they would like to go for the fall season. Once they decide on the season in which they're going to make their introduction, we're going to start looking for the game or the games in which make sense for their community. What we like to do from there is plug them into the rest of the state within our statewide league. And when we do that, we're making sure that even if they're dipping their first toe into the water, they're comfortable. There's no minimum signups required. And no matter who signs up, they're able to participate in a 6 week long season. So let's say they chose Rocket League, for example, and they only had 2 kids sign up for the fall season, and say this is the state of Illinois. We have 60, but let's just say we started all over, all right, brand new. And we only had five in the state of Illinois, and this one park and recreational department just started. They had 2 signups. We'd plug them with the rest of the state. They'd be in a full long season. They'd play Rocket League for 6 weeks. And then after that, we'd go and see if they'd be interested in the winter. But simultaneously, what we're doing this is providing the marketing materials and our best practices of how to reach the gamers within their community. We're talking to them extensively about how they felt it went, what they think the community is interested in, providing them surveys, talking to parents with educational esports 101 seminars and what they would like to see in future seasons, along with what they believe their child or children would be interested in. And why we're doing this and why it's so important on the onboarding process and keeping that process going is it's a conversation. You can't just plug and leave them alone. And that's what a lot of companies do. It's, I got them, they're signed in, perfect, I'm done, the onboarding process is over. I view it as a continued conversation, a continued dialogue to make our clients feel as though they're a part of something longer. It's breathing that breath of life to keep them happy and engaged.
Yeah, very cool. And so does the cost of participation fall on the parks and recreation, or does it fall on the participants? How does that work? Who's funding or paying for the operations side?
So the participants themselves are paying. This is similar to if I wanted to go play baseball for my recreational league, I have to pay the sign-up fee. And so our sign-up fees are $30 for 6 week season, which is roughly about $5 per week. And we found that this is the best way as it fits a bunch of different income levels.
Yeah, absolutely. And so with your role as the director of strategic partnerships, what are you aiming to do, and who are you trying to connect with?
Yeah, I mean, when it comes down to park and recreational departments, we're really looking to help any and all of them. And why it's such a vast net is we understand that esports has gone to a point that you're not just looking for kids to play video games, but to educate them and their parents about the industry as a whole. And so when traditional sports started, it was about the opportunity to keep people engaged and healthy, and then it evolved eventually into scholarship opportunities. Esports as a whole now has those scholarship opportunities. And so what we do is not just provide a family-friendly and fun experience. When we're looking, or when I'm looking, it's to help out any income communities have that chance to get their child to have a fun experience, get them off the street, be involved and social, and then be educated about areas that they can go into or explore while they're at school or once they graduate high school where they could go next. And this is what really matters the most to me, is because any kid should have an opportunity to get educated enough, if they so wish and be passionate, to go into esports, not just as a pro, but as an industry leader.
And so we're going to switch gears a little bit and talk about your director of operations at the Collegiate Esports Expo. And so you mentioned getting scholarships or at least painting the direction through GG Leagues to getting scholarships. What what is the Collegiate Esports Expo? What is the experience of that event?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So my one of my many other jobs is the director of operations at CEX, which is the College Esports Expo. And so what we are is we're a conference, and it goes back to the same beat with GG Leagues. I'm all about education. And so at the conference, what we allowed prior to COVID, as it was open to students to come, be a part of the conference for free, be able to sit in on a bunch of panels to be educated on a vast variety of areas inside of esports. And we invite panelists to talk about marketing, coaching, being an analyst, graphic design, or companies inside of esports, such as CSL, for example, and what their mission is, how they got started, where they're going, and why it matters. And this is great for college students that are just started college or going to graduate, looking for that internship or that entry-level job to get involved.
Yeah. You know, kind of going in a different direction here again. I've been thinking a lot lately about the gaming and esports world. And I think with on the entertainment side and professional side, there are tournaments that are hosted by developers that hold prize pools that often can support sort of this narrative of traditional sports being aligned with esports. But I think by and large, the majority of people that are playing games competitively are playing in online tournaments for wagers, right? And the conversation around this has been kind of, I guess, difficult to talk about, and sometimes because it's in many states, esports is aligned with gambling, and so GG Leagues doesn't necessarily facilitate prize pools, right? Am I correct in saying that?
For all of our recreational leagues, it's just medals. Give out prize pools, but it's outside of the recreational space. It's in our open leagues.
It's open leagues. And within the recreational state, but there's still scholarships in the recreational, right? So participation may lead to scholarship.
So in GG Leagues, we don't provide scholarships. What our goal is to educate the parents and the community at large at potential scholarship opportunities within the collegiate sector, which is where I also came from. I was a director of Robert Morris University here in Chicago. And so I provided the scholarships to those kids. So when we provide our seminars, I can tell them what they're looking for, how to go about it, what's the way to contact a director or a head coach after you graduate or when you're preparing to graduate high school, not just message them on Twitter saying, hey, what's up? And then linking your Twitch VODs. That's not going to do it.
Well, that's something interesting you mentioned there too. It's like the building a brand and building a personal brand and a business brand in esports often is directly related to what sort of content are you creating in Twitch VODs and things like this. In the programs at GG Leagues, are you giving educational resources to teach kids how to stream safely or how to even stream? Is that something that you guys are working on?
Yeah, we call it online behaviors, a part of our Esports 101 seminar. So it's how to conduct yourself being online, how to share information with an audience, how to make a username, how to protect your individual identity. What a lot of what I've noticed is that a lot of kids try to be a lot or overly aggressive as a way to demonstrate their personality, to be funny and engaging and enticing. But sometimes they're not just pushing the envelope, they're burning the entire thing. And that can, what I mean by that is it's detrimental to their brand and to their personality. And there's a way to be engaging and thought provoking without being, let's just say, using gamer words and thinking that that's a way to be funny or connect.
Yeah, I think about the gamer language and how communication happens in esports and gaming a lot. I mean, it's not, you know, it's not exclusive to gaming and esports. You just watch the music industry. You look at other fashion. You look at how people treat each other in other industries and entertainment in general. You know, people have an issue with communication. But it is cool that the gaming industry seems to be, you know, taking it seriously and helping, you know, make it a more inclusive, making us more of an inclusive society, you know, treating each other well and whatnot. So going back a little bit to the scholarships portion, so and kind of I kind of want to just juxtapose these two things. So, you know, everybody's going to want every young individual, I think this is more direct toward the younger audience, is going to desire a different goal throughout their like late teens to early 20s, right? So some are going to see the, you know, the accolades of education and think, well, I want to pursue the scholarships so that my time spent going, you know, going through the collegiate system, you know, I don't have to worry about the expenses that go into that, and, you know, grants and all these things that are associated with scholarships make going to school easier now. But there's another side of that coin too. And that's like the kids that don't think that, you know, college is necessary, you know, sort of that Gary V mantra of like, you know, you can always go to school at any point in time, you know? And so they're going to more along the lines of pursue that, you know, entertainment career or celebrity in being a YouTuber or a TikToker or something like that, and work toward building, you know, the monetary experience of getting monetized through streaming platforms or video platforms or written or whatever it may be. How do you see, I know you come from the collegiate side, but how do you feel about collegiate in esports? And do you think that maybe, you know, there's a maturity that needs to take place before these esports collegiate programs are more than just a like club programs? You know, I know that Robert Morris is more like taking it really seriously, but a lot of these collegiate programs are still looking at it as sort of like a recreational activity.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's a lot to unpack right there, especially just with the collegiate point. And talking about kids really quick before I go into college. So if you're young and you're putting in time, you're practicing, and you have the skill level to get a scholarship, I think that's fantastic. But let's just say you were not looking at college. Going back to Gary Vee, and you know, you could do it anytime. You're right, you can't. But what's hurting you from also preparing that, right? So I would say if you have the capabilities or if you have that mindset, build that brand, okay? Build that brand so you can keep all those doors open. So if you want to focus in on, say, Twitch and streaming and that monetary value, do it with a company mindset, okay? That goes back to what I was saying. Don't just be pushing the envelope because you think you're funny and witty and this is how you're going to connect with your audience. That's not building a brand. That's just being wild and you're just throwing everything out there. And the internet is forever. People will remember what you say and do. So make sure when you really think about how you want to put yourself out there that it matters and that it's going to affect you positively for years to come. So that way, when, say, you want to go to college, you can, or if you want to get a job, you can. Because what I see a lot of is you have a 15-year-old that has done streaming and they just graduate. Now, fast forward 3 years, they just graduated high school, and you know, they got about 500 followers and they want to go into the broadcasting side, or they want to go into being a part of the esports team. And we go through some of those VODs, and if you say some choice language, it can affect you. And it can affect you greatly, meaning that you won't be offered a scholarship opportunity. And I think if you're looking for esports, and you're going to look for a job or an entry-level job or an internship, and you're going to say, well, you know, I broadcasted for 3 years. This is what my socials are. This is how my follower count has gone up month to month. And this is what my average viewership is. I can handle social media or whatever. They're also going to go through what you've said and done on all the socials that you've linked and your Twitch broadcasting or Facebook, whatever you picked. And if you said choice language or if you took a particular stance, it can wreck you. And that's why you're seeing a lot of these companies now double down on a vetting processes. So it doesn't matter that you've done or you've been a part of esports or streamed for 4 years. If you haven't done it correctly, if you haven't done it, I would say professionally or with a mature mindset, you might not be able to do it. And that can mean a bunch of different things. And we can go into like several different side conversations for that. But I know we don't have time.
Yeah,
for that.
No, that's so. That's the thing. Like, I really enjoyed where you're going with that thread there. What I was thinking is like two different things. I was thinking you know, you can't teach old dogs new tricks. And there are a lot of people who are career transitioning into this industry. And mm-hmm. So there are a lot of adults, technically adults, that have ingrained the way that they communicate, you know, thinking of like the sideline, you know, the armchair quarterback dads that go to the, you know, the high school football games and are yelling to tell the coach how to coach his team, right? That exists now in the esports space. We have adults that speak out of turn about what is esports, what isn't esports, and you know, it's interesting. One of the other things that Gary Vee is recently saying about the NFT stuff that's going on in the world is like doing your homework, your 50 hours of homework. Yeah. And we've got a lot of people that are coming from other industries into this industry that didn't do their homework before, you know, coming in and starting to either throw their financial weight, their, you know, past experience weight, whatever that is that, you know, they feel like they feel like the people in the industry needs to respect them. They feel entitled. There's an entitlement factor to the old dogs that are, you know, trying to throw their bone into the ring and you know, benefit or profit off of this industry. And that's sort of a challenge that I think. And, that we're facing now with the youth and whatnot. I think that they just don't have the life experience to really to see it for what it is in a lot of different ways. But you know, yeah, that's why I'm just thinking of these things because, you know, you mentioned and I mentioned, you know, that esports is kind of at least the narrative around what esports is kind of centralized to the East Coast. Centralized to LA and the East is what I meant to say, like Korea, Japan, and China for what it's worth. Like it's all sort of centralized in that area. And the stories about, you know, the Midwest, smaller countries like India and smaller markets like India even though it's now a massive mobile market, they don't, it doesn't really kind of tell the full story of like, what does it mean? What is it like? What's characteristics of someone who's doing esports in these other regions? You know, you have, if you like a, if you compare it to like New York hip hop to Southern hip hop to West Coast hip hop, they're really different things. And so I think that the, you know, the way that the US paints esports, professional esports is kind of very challenging because there's like a, it's painted as this super lucrative, you know, almost like, more aligned with pop culture than it is like sports and things like that. I think
you're
there's something there.
Yeah, you're saying that esports is kind of in line with entertainment and lifestyle branding rather than it be closer related to actual traditional forms of sports. I mean, if you look at esports here in the United States now, I mean, FaZe Clan and you have 100 Thieves, they do a lot of what? Content. That's everything that's their lifestyle branding. That's what they're promoting the most. But I agree with you. There's definitely different versions of esports. Once you get out of the United States, you know, what does it look like? Where is it going? Mm-hmm. How did they handle it? But kind of just pulling all the way back to like the original point that we were talking about too, was, you know, collegiate esports. And collegiate esports in on that is we're talking about complexities of overall esports. And we went to a bunch of different nations and how they operated. Collegiate esports is everywhere. And there's only a few programs that I believe that are really the top of the top. And if you want to go and try to get better as a player, if you want to have an opportunity of, I would guess, going pro, that standardized version of college going to pro, it's even fewer, you know. And the one that comes to mind because it's most recent is Maryville University, where two of their players most recently, you know, were picked up by professional orgs. But when you do look at other administrations at college, they do treat it as though it's a club. And so what I strongly recommend to anybody that's graduating high school, going to college, or somebody in college looking to transfer to a esports university, do your homework. Okay. You want to talk to that coach. You want to talk to that director. Okay. Your future is on the line. Don't just go because they have an esports program and they have a LAN center, you know, and it looks really nice and all the, do not go there. Don't go there because it looks nice. Go there because it makes sense for what you want to do as a professional. Okay. Your brand. What are you going to get out of it? Like, are you looking to go pro? If so, what are the best programs that have those connections to set you up to go that route? That could be conversations, actual networking, which people in esports, you know, if you want to be a pro, or if you just want to work in the industry, you have to learn how to network. You have to learn how to present yourself. And no, that does not mean you need to have a suit and tie all the time, but you need to understand how to communicate and get your point across. If you want to just be in the industry and you're not looking to go pro, but you want to do broadcasting, first one that comes to mind is Boise State has a fantastic broadcasting program. And you also have Full Sail. They can help you set up. Again, you have to select on where you want to go. Don't just go to DePaul because you want to go to, you like their esports program because they have a LAN center. What do they actually provide you? Don't just go to NIU because they have three LAN centers out in Illinois and they're growing and they recently became a part of a conference. What do they provide you and does it make sense for your brand? And I'm just naming those two off the top of my head because I'm a Midwesterner and those two names just come to mind. But that's an example.
No, absolutely. 100%. I went to the University of Hawaii. I felt with my career, my collegiate career, it was, I definitely just went with the flow. You know, mm-hmm. I didn't ever feel like I had this robust understanding of what the university system was or collegiate was. I was just doing what, you know, what I thought everyone else was doing, whatever the majority of people were doing who were good at school. You know, I was good at school, mm-hmm. so I knew how to do my homework and I knew how to turn it in on the deadline. And, you know, that sort of works, you know, is sort of like how the career path is supposed to work. You're supposed to, like, you know, do what you're told in school to eventually go get a job where you get told what to do and you get paid a good amount of money for executing on and doing a good job. Now, that sort of seems once you become someone like myself who's never really been like a signed professional, mm-hmm. always been a contractor, and you know, a W-2 employee versus a 1099, right? That sort of the professional world, you begin to realize that if you want to be a leader and you want to have more say over what you're doing, it isn't somewhere I feel like kind of uncomfortable talking about in the esports space, because there's just so many bad deals that are going around for players and broadcasters and stuff like that. So, and this is again not exclusive to the esports industry, right? This is something I think that society has an issue, is challenged with. And I think I do believe that the internet is starting to shed light on those bad actors that are taking advantage of people, mm-hmm. you know, signing them to deals that they could never fulfill on, or, you know, putting them in a position of debt. And in other words, why I guess this is where this thread is going is like, I totally agree with, you know, having a vision and a direction when choosing a college, but also be mindful of like, what is the cost, right?
Yeah, correct. I mean, another thing too, we're, you know, esports gets younger and younger, and it's asking a lot for these kids. I mean, I remember when I was 12, when I was 13, 14, you know, you're not thinking about this. You're thinking about having fun. You know, you're yeah. thinking about, you know, trying to connect with your friends. And now it's like, okay, well, you want to be in esports. You got to think 10 years, 15 years ahead of your time. I mean, that's why actually a better way to put it, you're a child actor. You mm-hmm. know, it's difficult hours. You have to be more grown up than you thought you had to be as early as you had to. It's a lot of time, your lack of sleep. You have to educate yourself faster than your peers are doing. So not only are you going to school, you know, for a typical education, you're going to school to learn whatever your specialization you want to be in. So if, like, I want to be a caster, I have to get years upon years of experience. I have mm-hmm. to learn how to actually commentate an event and start trying to see if I can get into anywhere to do that. And that's not just being in college. Like, that's just doing grassroots tournaments, or my friend hosted one, so I'm going to get that for practice and then go from there. Like, we're asking these kids to do a lot. And that's why I was against, and you probably saw this, which was the ECI. Which the certification program, because we're already asking these young kids to do so much already, right? Get an education, or like, go get an education. Or if you don't want to get an education, go get that experience. But you're adding another gate upon the several gates that are already in front of them. That's not a pathway. That is a stopping mechanism. And you mentioned this before, and kind of turning around a little bit, you know, there's so many bad actors in the industry. I agree. Mm-hmm. And we have to figure out a way to remove them from this industry. But I don't think a certification program is the way to go about it. Cause I'm going to tell you this right now, they're going to end up still getting it. Like it'll get to a point where they can still end up picking it up.
Yeah, that's, it's true. You know, and I'm not here to, I want to be a little bit humble here because I personally feel that I've had my wins and my losses in esports, like on the business side and the professional side, mm-hmm. you know, where I felt like I could have accomplished more. I could have done this better. I could have done all these different things. So, you know, there are people who wake up on third base, right? That's the thing. Like they're going to be put into a position of leadership without having really done the groundwork to accomplish that. Like just like people who take advantage of the system and you know, they end up with the certificates or the licenses or whatever it is just because they're associated in some way to some of the people who are, you know, built that really did the groundwork and were the foundation for what esports is today. I mean, we see that a lot, like with like Follow for Follow and, you know, sort of like this, what the collaboration culture, right? So, you know, if somebody who's successful or has celebrity in the esports industry, they can easily, you know, give some of that shine to somebody maybe who is not necessarily the best at the game or the best character, has the best, you know, moral values or whatever it may be. And that's sort of a challenge I think that people face in this industry and other industries as well. But there's so many things to talk about, and you know I'm gonna have to have you know get involved with some of the other stuff that we've got going on in the community and you know continue the conversation again on Clubhouse or another place. But I really appreciate you coming onto the podcast to talk about collegiate and recreational leagues. And is there anything that we're missing before we sign off here and give yourself a chance to let people know how they can find you?
Yeah. Before I kind of jump into that, I think we're trying to find ways of verifying individuals and vetting them. It was a nice stab that was taken. And I believe that eventually we'll find our way. But if you want to talk more, and this goes for anybody that's listening, you can find me on Twitter at Mike, and then it's WISNIOS. Send me a DM. I'll get back to you as soon as humanly possible. That is the best way that anybody can get in contact with me. And then a few shout outs to some teams that are really hustling at the bottom. Bear Claw Esports, owner is Harley. She's fantastic. She's a hustler. She's out of Germany. And then we have Storm Esports out of Chicago. Fantastic run team, fantastic ownership, really trying to put things together. They're Chicago grown, Midwestern grown. Love to see on where they're going, and they're making a lot of big plays recently.
Yeah, that's interesting. And before we sign off here, the networking aspect that we've been talking about, like how do you maximize your discovery of new entrepreneurs or new players? What is it you're doing to meet these people?
So not only was I attending several different conferences and just walking up and talking to people, being involved in the conversation, I'm on LinkedIn a lot. When I'm looking at the endemic and non-endemic, I'm the older generation, get the conversation going there, present yourself. If you're working the younger angle, if you're looking for players, conversations, I'm on Twitter a lot. That is where a lot of the esports conversations are actually happening. And then if I'm looking for, I would say, influencers or upcoming influencers, I'm checking out upcoming Twitch streamers and how they're handling themselves and promoting themselves and kind of watching their trajectory. I would say it's similar to watching stocks. I'm looking at
how they're actually, their viewer base is growing, how their followers are growing. I'll listen into a few audio clips. But that's how I'm maximizing who I know, who I can connect with, and who I can tap into, and maybe assist in any situations whatsoever.
Yeah. Thank you very much for that experience. And I think that's going to be very valuable for a lot of people who are looking for a little bit of direction in how to meet people, and get, connected. So once again, this has been the Esports Business Network podcast. Our guest, Michael Vizniós. I got that right this time, right?
You're close.
Close enough. Close, you know, closer than horseshoes and hand grenades. But once again, thank you very much, Michael, for being on the show. And thank you for listening. Hey, y'all. It's Trent Knox, founder and CEO of Esports Business Network. I want to say thank you for listening to this podcast. If you're finding value in the podcast, I would greatly appreciate it if you share the podcast to your network and write a positive review on your preferred podcast platform. If you're feeling extra generous, feel free to make a contribution to our working capital accounts on Cash App or PayPal. Our username is ESPORTSBIZNET. That's Esports BizNet on both platforms. As always, we'd love for you to join our community and platform at https://www.ebn.gg. You can take advantage of a free subscription to our bronze membership by following the directions on the homepage. Part of the bronze membership is access to our Discord server and private membership channels. The conversation only evolves with participation from esports entrepreneurs like yourself. We need to hear about your esports business to understand how we can move the industry forward as a community. You can also join the community by joining the Facebook and LinkedIn groups. An additional goal of EBN is to move the conversation forward on your preferred social media platform. So as a last note, don't forget to follow us on social media for current events, news, and other esports related topics. Follow and subscribe to Esports Business Network on social media. Looking forward to networking with you very soon.